3, 2, 1. Boom. And we're live. My man.
What's up, baby?
First of all, how the fuck do you punch so hard? I've seen a lot of hard punchers, man. I've been watching boxing since I was a little kid. You've got some freakish power, man.
Yeah.
It's weird. You got weird power.
Most definitely. We always say I'm a freak of nature. I definitely got some type of freakish power. I always tell the story that my grandmother said I was anointed by God. She was always like, if I got suspended for school and stuff, she was always like, God is trying to use you. You're the one. You're chosen. You know. Ooh. Yeah. She was very big, and you know, she was big in the spirituality and Christianity. You know, so she's always be a teacher. You know, she wasn't really a disciplinary type of woman. She was a teacher. She wanted to teach you, tell you certain things. She used to always say, "I was annoying." She wouldn't even let my parents whoop me.
Wow.
Not in front of her. That's how serious she were. She like. She like, don't you better not whoop him. He's going to be the one to bring you up. He's going to be the one to bring you guys up. Don't whoop him, you know.
Somebody tells you something like that at a young age, you might believe it.
Well, I really, you know, just being so young, you know, just being, you know, we did as children do, you know. I didn't really think too much about it because I didn't understand what she was saying, you know. I didn't start understanding until you start putting away childish ways and you become a grown man. You start venturing out in life and experiencing life on your own and start seeing certain things. And then even when I got out on my own, you know, there's a lot of things I didn't start understanding until I was 30. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just to, you know, cause certain things, different things were happening in my life, you know, and that you know, sometimes you deal with it and you handle it the best way you can handle. But it's certain things that starts to happen. He was like, my grandma said something about this. Or, you know, it's just, just, you know. And that's how my life been. But it's amazing how I can come in at 209 and fight a guy that's coming in at 260 and able to drop him like I did. Like, it's crazy. But I've always been stronger than what I've looked.
It's interesting that the cruiserweight division doesn't get any love. I mean, the last time it got love was when Evander Holyfield was fighting in it.
Yeah.
That was really the last time people cared about the cruiserweight division. Now it's a forgotten division, kind of.
Yeah, that's true. You know, my brother's just starting in the cruiserweight division. Hopefully he can bring some excitement, you know, to it, because you're so right. You know, it's almost like they don't even talk about it.
It doesn't make any sense because the light heavyweight division gets a lot of love. People love watching light heavyweight fights. Always gets lots of attention. But the cruiserweight division is always like, people look at it like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Put on some weight. Go up.
Yep. It's true. It's true because the heavyweights always overshadow those guys.
Did you really weigh 209 the night of the fight?
I weighed 209 the night of the fight. That's crazy. When they came in and weighed me, they would just want to get an official weigh in and see where you are. So I'm all confident. And I know I done went up from 212.
Right.
And I get on the scale and it says 209. I'm like, my mouth, I'm like, what? You mean to tell me I lost 3 more pounds? You know, I'm like, how did I do that? My manager, you know, he thinks it's come from stress and a lot of other different things or whatever.
The last couple of days right before the fight.
That allow your body. Just overall, a lot of stuff was, you know, a lot of stuff going on. He thinks it's because of that, you know, because your body, the balance of your body and all that and stuff like that. But I really don't know. I really don't really care about weight because the majority of fighters that have fought me, they've all weighed me, like almost all my career, you know. So I always say I'd rather be the part than look the part because I've been in many situations where I've seen guys looking the part, but then when it get to the nitty gritty, they're not the part.
Well, you look the part too. Just don't get it twisted.
Right.
You look like a giant Tommy Hearns.
Yeah.
You know, when Tommy was in his prime, it's just, it's what makes sense though is that you keep that power in the 12th round, whereas those bigger, heavier guys, maybe because the blood's got to push through all that extra muscle and all that extra body tissue, maybe they can't keep that power the way you can, because in the 12th round, first of all, I don't know how the fuck he got up. I do not understand. I remember watching it on TV. I'm like, wow, he knocked him out in the 12th round. That is crazy.
Right.
That is. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. Guys, you're responsible for taking care of you, and that means spending some time cleaning yourself up. But I know that can be a challenge, especially when you're not sure what products or razors to use. So to help you get started, I want to recommend Manscaped. They can help you take care of all your grooming needs, even when it comes to your more sensitive areas. Or as our friends at Manscaped like to call them, the boys. Their trimmers, the Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, 4.0 Pro, and 5.0 Ultra are all equipped with skin-safe technology to help reduce the risk of grooming accidents. They're also waterproof and come with an LED spotlight so you can actually see what you're shaving. And I know that summer's coming, which means vacations and traveling for a lot of you. Well, Manscaped has you covered. Their trimmers come with a convenient travel case that you can easily pack and bring along. For the best you and your boys have ever looked, trust Manscaped. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code Rogan at manscaped.com. Tap the banner to learn more. Skin-safe technology does not guarantee cut protection. It's crazy. And then, of course, you played that thing on your Instagram, which basically shows that you did knock him out.
Right. I definitely knocked him out.
He definitely didn't get up in time.
Right. He definitely didn't, you know.
But it was his job to just get up at 10. It's not his job to know exactly when 10 seconds is.
Correct. No, Jack Reese definitely had delays on that count. I done seen the fight like 6 times.
And
definitely when he got to 8, you know, 8 was a very long delay. 8! Then he said, 9! You know, like I said, 9 out of 10 judges would have waved that off, you know, easily. Especially when you've seen a guy eye roll in the back of his head and him hitting the canvas and his whole head meat penetrated, like it started getting tight, the muscles in his head is getting tight in the back, and you know, but it's so much with that. I know how he got. I didn't understand how he got up either. And God is a good God.
Well, he believed it. That's what he believed.
He believed it.
Yeah, look, he got up, man, and he got up and he boxed well.
Yeah,
he recovered. You came after him and you hit him with some more big shots, and he kept moving, but then he started getting his legs back under him, and then he started landing.
There's also other things as well, too. You know, he's still a gypsy, though.
Yeah.
You know they believe in a lot of things.
Yeah, you love that, I mean? Right?
So,
you never know.
You know.
Hey, it was a fucking phenomenal fight, though, man.
It was epic.
It was epic. It was amazing to watch.
Most definitely.
I watched it by myself. Yeah. My family was gone. They went out for the day, so I was like, this is great. Just me.
Did you watch it on mute?
No.
See what I'm saying? The commentators, man, they was horrible. Yeah. They was horrible.
Really?
I felt they was very biased. It was a lot of things they was pointing out what Fury was doing, but not a lot of things what I was doing. Mm. It just, even when I knocked down in the ninth round, they had all this to say. But when I knocked down in the ninth round, it was so quiet.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even a devastating knockout. You know, I was getting hit behind the head, but they wanted to call out me hitting him behind the ear.
Mm.
But how many times I got hit behind the head never was revealed. It was like, even just this whole, you know, build up to it, you know, he sold his story. He sold his story to America. And, you know, any comeback sport, it deal with emotional, you know, emotions, you know.
Right.
People got emotionally tied to it. A lot of people could relate to his story, you know. Certain things I could relate to. And then, you know, when you capture, you know, the world, and you capture people that get emotional involved, they want you to win.
Right.
You know, just because of the story, I want them to win and stuff like that. And the commentators, you know, especially Paulie, got very emotional with it. A lot of other cast as well, too. Just going back, listening to them. I saw the fight 6 times, you know.
Mm.
I definitely had it. You can see a better look on the fight. Muting the TV, you know.
Well, I listen to the commentary, but, you know, I do commentary myself for the UFC. So a lot of times, even if I'm listening, I'm not really listening that much. I'm just watching.
Yeah.
I'm watching what's happening. It's like I'm having a conversation in a room with a bunch of people.
Right.
I was watching what was happening. What was interesting to me was you made adjustments, you know. And one thing that you made a big adjustment is when you landed in the 12th round, you shorten everything up.
Mm.
You shorten that right hand up. It wasn't a winging punch at all. It came straight down the pipe. And then that left hand behind him and the fucking timing, because he was already going down.
Correct.
You already hit him clean. He's going down. Then that fucking left hook, man.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, I mean, it was
that
crazy.
That was what was really crazy that he got up from, because he snapped him around like The Exorcist. It was nuts. When he went flying and then flatlined and laid back, I was like, it's over. I can't believe he knocked him out in the 12th fucking round. Because all fight, I was saying, all this guy needs is one punch. Like, you got that scary, creepy power. Mm-hmm. And then, boom! You could say that all day long, but if it never lands, it doesn't mean anything, right?
Correct.
But then it landed. And the way it landed was like, holy shit.
I told Fury, I said, you're going to have to be perfect for all 12 rounds. Yeah. I only have to be perfect for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
And
that's one thing that I did hear the commentators say. They said that he's proven that he doesn't have to be perfect because he got hit. But I was like, but he didn't get hit clean. He got hit one time, like pretty solid behind the ear.
Mm-hmm.
But the big one was in the 12th. I mean, I'm so impressed with both things, with you being able to land like that and with him being able to get up.
Right.
That was probably one of the best heavyweight fights I've fucking ever seen.
It was a lot of pressure on me that night. You know?
I'm sure.
Just the heavyweight division has been dead for a long time. And then we started with last year or something, just started really just progressing and people started to talk about it. Especially been dead in America. I remember a time when no one knew who was the heavyweight champion of the world were. You know, it was the European guys and stuff like that. So I always made it my business, like, I want to bring it back. I want to do it like Ali did and a lot of the other former champions did, where people knew and understand the sport of boxing and who was the champion and stuff like that. I always felt I had that duty to fulfill, even when I was in the Olympics, because a lot of people don't even know I was in the Olympics.
Right.
You know, I was the only American to medal in the 2008 Olympics as well. And just from that point, I just feel like I had to be the one to bring it back. And to come to L.A., to bring out all the stars, and like, I got everyone here.
And you medaled in the Olympics pretty soon, pretty young in your boxing career from the time you started training.
Correct.
Like, how long was it until you were fighting in the Olympics?
I made the Olympics team in a year and a half. I started boxing at 21.
You know how fucking crazy that is?
I know.
So a year and a half of boxing, you make the Olympic team, and you win a bronze medal.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
You know, they didn't even have my name written on the list of the one that's going to be on the team. You know, they always say I was, I just came out of nowhere. Wilder came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being in a tournament and had this elder man, you know, he's seen these kids like year after year after year. And I remember him saying, hey, son, who are you? I said, I'm Deontay Wilder. And he looked at the guy next to him. I said, Deontay Wilder. You know, where are you from? I said, I'm from Alabama. He said, Alabama. He laughed at me. Because they never seen no one from Alabama. You know, we was based off of football and basketball and stuff like that. I was surprised it was a gym in Alabama when I did start. You know, I was like, wow, like I can't believe like I'm in a boxing gym. I never thought one would be here. We didn't do that.
You know, we didn't
hear about it. But I started because of my daughter that was born with spina bifida. So, you know, I couldn't play football or basketball anymore because you had to go to school for that. I needed money right now, you know. So I was looking at a way of making money, like, right now. And, you know, I had a friend in college. We was always talking about what we want to try to do and what are the things we're trying to do to get to that point. Because, you know, talk is cheap. We can always say what we want. But if you're not applying any type of action towards what you with your words, it's just talk, you know. And he said he thought I should box. He thought I should start boxing. I thought it was a great idea as well, too. He thought I should start, but only for the simple fact that I handle myself well streetwise. You know, nobody ever seen me just lose or get beat up streetwise. I was this quiet guy. I tell people I never look for trouble, but trouble always found me for some reason. And when I did release the anger, when I released, like it was even back then was dramatic. You know what I'm saying? I kid you not. Even back then,
I believe it.
You know, and I could never calm down though. At that point, I was like the Hulk. I couldn't calm down. It took me a lot to calm down. Even if I would see blood, I still wouldn't calm down. And it used to be scary for me because I, you know, even back then I had power, but I had a lot of aggression. I had a lot of anger for some reason. I never know why, you know, and we thought it was a great idea. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do it. You know, I can't lose. What can I lose? You know, and just met up with the guy, went to the gym, you know, up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And I walked in there, I kid you not, I felt like I heard the bells. I mean, I heard the sounds, the heavenly sound. Hallelujah. I swear, I kid, when I walked up in there, it was just the speed bag and the heavy bag being hit and the conversations and then the guys sparring. And my eyes is everywhere. I'm like, this is it. I never been in a place like this before, ever. You know, it's like new to me. And I was like, I felt like this was it. This is my last opportunity to be someone, to be a professional athlete and be able to make money for my daughter. I didn't know, I came in as a journeyman. That's what I wanted to be. I didn't want to, you know, I didn't know nothing about amateur. And I knew about Ali and what he did, his journey as an amateur. But I didn't know the term of an amateur. Like, what is, you know what I'm saying? So walking into the gym, my whole mentality was to make money for my daughter. I was like, yo, let me learn just the fundamentals and just stick me out of there. But then we had this conversation in the gym about the Olympic trials and the Olympics. So I remember it briefly, like, we started talking about it, me and my trainer now, we started talking about it, and then it just became a whole big gym discussion. Everybody stopped doing what they was doing just to get in on this conversation. We didn't know how to get there, but we knew that if we kept winning, that we eventually get to that point. So I just kept knocking guys out. I just kept winning. And then that's how I got on the Olympics team. And then I told my daughter when I made the Olympics team, I medaled and did all that. And then I turned pro shortly after. And I remember telling my daughter when she was 1 year old, I said, Daddy's going to be a world champion. And he's going to be able to support you beyond your belief. You know, for me, it meant a lot for me to say that to her because I come from a place for unfulfilled promises. You know, you ever had someone promise you something and you wait for years and years, it don't happen. You know, you still holding on to that promise that they told you, especially being a child, you know, you still like, all right, you know, until it just don't happen no more. Or you see that certain thing that was supposed to be given is no more there. It's gone, you know. And that really hurted me, you know, at times just coming up. That's why I'm a man of my word now. You know, if I tell someone something, you can take it to the bank. You know, it's going to happen. You know, it's just, God is an on-time God. So it don't come when we want it, but it's always on time when he's involved. And when I'm involved, when I say something, I try to make it. I'm a man of my word no matter what I say.
So you walk in the gym, you have this feeling, you know this is where you're meant to be. Mm-hmm. And do you just, how far away is this gym from your house?
At that time, this gym, I'm still in Tuscaloosa, Northport. That's about 30, probably about 45 minutes away from where I live.
Not too far. You can correct. You can get there. And how often are you going there?
Every day.
Every day. Every day. Immediately. New change of life.
Yeah, you know what? I was still working for Budweiser. I was driving the truck for Budweiser. So at times, you know, anybody working Budweiser know that you got a specific time to come in, but you don't have a time where you get off. You know, sometimes you can work from 5 hours, depending on if you have a bar route, which is the easiest. And then you can have a 17-hour day, which I done had before, where you had to go to way deep in the south, way deep in other cities or whatever. I used to have a stop that took me 2 hours to get there before I even, you know, 2 hours to get there before I even can work my first stop. And you talking about having 17 stops on your list to do. I mean, on your to-do list, and your first stop is 2 hours. You know what I mean? That was a hell of a ride just to be able to. It's depressed. It makes you depressed just because you got to wait 2 hours just to get started. You ready? You want to go home as soon as possible. I remember times where I used to drive the big truck to the gym. So you have a big Budweiser truck advertising Bud Light outside of the gym.
Wow.
And you'll see me out there. It used to be times where I used to sleep in my car right there at the gym. You know, I really wanted to get it. I told my daughter that I would be a world champion, and I was devoted to this sport, which I'm still to this day. But it was a lot of sacrifices I had to sacrifice for my daughter to really just be here, to be able to support her with spina bifida, because I knew nothing about the disorder. I'm 19 years old, you know. Just trying to a loving father just trying to support his daughter.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you know.
It's an amazing story. That's a different kind of motivation.
Man, then being in Alabama, we had to scrape up money to go to other states because we didn't really have too many heavyweights here. You know, so we had to go find sparring elsewhere. My trainer tells the story to this day, you know, how we had to scrape up. Because you get a lot of people want to come apart, be apart now or whatever. He always said, where was y'all when we were scraping up the change? And you know, we had to scrape up money for gas and something to eat and stuff, which is all true, you know.
Yeah.
We all had to scrape it up.
Now, did anybody ever teach you to punch before you started boxing? Did you ever have an uncle that held pads for you or anything?
Nothing. You know, I didn't know nothing about boxing.
But
right.
you definitely knew how to punch people,
though. Of course, for sure.
But how did you learn? Did you learn just from watching TV? Like, you know, like
just
a lot
life,
of times,
streetwise.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, the best thing in life is experiencing it for yourself. Life teaches you everything. You know, sometimes you can get knowledge from books, but it's nothing like real life,
right.
Real reality.
So, you know, are you with the same trainer that you were when you first started?
I'm one of the few.
Wow.
You're still with the same one.
That's amazing, too.
Yeah.
So how long did it take before it started feeling right to you, like in terms of like throwing combinations and moving? And
It took a while because I had to, in the Olympics, I had to play catch up. I always was playing catch up because these guys, they've been boxing ever since they was young, little boys and stuff. And, you know, that's how I learned really about boxing and how it would take your life away from you. You know, I'm looking at these young guys, they coming up, and some of them cannot go to school because of boxing, you know. Some of them, they would tell me how they've missed birthdays, they've missed holidays, they've missed classes from school just to fulfill the dreams, you know. It'll take everything away from you. Now, I've seen some have graduate high school. You know, and that's a great accomplishment when you're in boxing to graduate high school, you know, because there's so many tournaments and so many different things, because boxing is a year-round sport, you know what I mean? So it's so many different things that would go on that these kids, you know, these guys would try to, you know, make this team, make that team, go to this trip, go to that trip just to get the experience. And I'm listening to them tell their story, and here I am, you know, just coming from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, just picking it up, playing catch up. I'm listening to everyone's story and where they come from and how they do this, and I'm studying them on certain things. Like, it was amazing to be able to just go to the Olympics and just do what I did and compete with these guys. I was the least experienced guy in the whole tournament.
Of course.
At the Olympics. You
how
know?
Could you not be? A year and a half in, you're probably the least experienced guy to ever medal ever.
Yeah, probably so.
Who the fuck else has even come close to that? I bet if you went over the Olympic records of guys who have boxed and medaled, I bet you're number one with a bullet.
Yeah, probably so.
It's not even anything close. Yeah. That's crazy. A year and a half in.
It was amazing experience. Just to be there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it wasn't for boxing, I probably would have never been able to travel outside the country. You know?
Yeah.
Boxing showed me everything, you know.
Well, what's amazing is one of the things that you said, that the heavyweight division, which has always been the glamour division, right? When Tyson was the champ and Holyfield was the champ and all these different fighters, the Holyfield-Riddick-Bowe era. I mean, these were gigantic fights. I mean, everybody in the world was watching. It was a big deal. But then when Klitschko won, I remember I was on a plane with a buddy of mine who's a comedian, and I said, you know who that is? And he goes, no. I go, that's the heavyweight champion of the world. He goes, get the fuck out of here. He goes, it's a white guy? I go, isn't that crazy? I go, it's a white guy from Russia, and nobody knows who it is, because it was a weird thing. It's like everybody been the Tommy Morrison days. People, there's always the great white hope. Dude's always wanted a white guy to be the heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. Jerry Cooney, he's going to beat Larry Holmes. Larry Holmes beat the fuck out of Jerry Cooney. I remember I was in high school when that happened. Everybody was hoping that a white guy was going to win. And then when a white guy finally won, nobody gave a shit, because he was kind of, he's got a very effective style, but it's, you know, it's not the most fan friendly. He would jab and grab, you know, he'd grab a hold of you and he could knock you out if he hit you clean, and he knocked a lot of guys out. He was a big fucking guy,
right.
But no one cared. It was weird. It was weird that, because he was a guy living in Germany, and he, you know, was huge in Germany and
right.
speaking Russian and English and everything else. I mean, he's a really smart guy.
Right.
Nobody cared. It was weird. It was fucking weird.
I know. I remember.
Because boxing was still huge. People were still paying attention to Floyd Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez and Manny Pacquiao. I mean, all the lighter weight classes were still getting all this love. Bernard Hopkins.
Yeah.
People were watching all these fights. Nobody gave a shit about the heavyweight division. It was strange.
They said, you know, once you don't have an elite American heavyweight, you know, it dies down a little. They said, where goes the heavyweight division, so does boxing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of true in some sense. But if it didn't happen that way, where the heavyweight division died down, a lot of these guys that got a lot of shine wouldn't have gotten no shine.
because the heavyweight division would have been in full force. Probably.
Yeah. Oh, this is for sure.
Well, maybe it would have just made the whole sport bigger. Because, you know, this is a good time now for boxing. There's a lot of really high-level champions. It's a fun time to be a boxing fan to watch. But to look at your record, like when you went into the Wilder fight, or excuse me, went into the Tyson Fury fight, you went with 39-0?
39-0.
39-0.
40-0 with 39 KOs.
Okay, 40-0 with 39 knockouts.
Correct.
That's a movie record.
Yeah.
Like that's like a guy fighting someone in Creed. Right. If you looked at that, that's what it would be. Like, what? He's 40. Like, this is the guy you're fighting.
Yeah.
He's 40-0 with 39 knockouts. What? Like, that would be a movie scene.
Exactly.
Like, you would be a bad guy in a movie, just designed to fuck people up. Mm-hmm. But the fact that no one, you know, was looking at this as this was a gigantic cultural moment. This wasn't just a big heavyweight fight between two of the tallest guys and big, tall, but move good. Both you guys move real good. I mean, Tyson, for 6 foot, what is he, 9?
6'9",
256, and he's bobbing and moving a lot, and he's got that weird herky-jerky style.
Yeah.
He's a trip, man. It's very unusual to have the two of you guys together. In my eyes, this was like a reemergence of the heavyweight division in pop culture. It's like everybody was finally paying attention to the heavyweight division in boxing. Like, finally, this was it. And I was like, this is a big fight. This isn't just a big fight between two guys who are undefeated, who are at the top of their game, who, you know, Tyson didn't lose his title. He had it, and, you know, they took it away from him, but he was still undefeated.
Right.
So that was a giant cultural moment. And when the fight went down and turned out to be one of the best heavyweight title fights ever,
right.
I mean, fuck.
It's amazing. Even just to listen to you, you know, describing the stuff, I still feel the excitement.
I'm sure.
Feeling. I'm like, why? Like, it was amazing.
It was amazing.
You know, I'm just ready for the rematch. Like, if people was excited and enjoyed that, just imagine the rematch. You know, this is going to be amazing.
Oh, it's going to be incredible. And it puts Anthony Joshua in a terrible situation.
Oh, most
terrible.
Definitely.
He looks awful.
Oh, they begging now.
He looks terrible. He's going to fight some other guy. No one gives a fuck. And it's like, your titles, whatever titles you got, they're bullshit.
Yeah.
They don't mean anything. Everybody knows this is where the real title is. I mean, this is it's a wrap now.
Yes. They definitely begging now. He's trying to reach out all of a sudden now. His management has been, you know, trying to reach out to Mines as well. You know, but he could have had this opportunity. He had many opportunities. He could have fought Luis Ortiz.
Yeah.
He could have fought me. He had a chance to fall Fury as well. Like,
they're playing it safe over on that side of the pond.
Really is.
They're playing it safe.
But no, you know, people want to know who's the best now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Especially after seeing the Fury and this Fury fight, you know, people want to see who's the best. And I've been trying to show people, you know, who's the best. I always say I'm the best. I'm gonna forever say I'm the best until I get defeated. You know, and right now I'm in a candidate for, you know, Fighter of the Year, and also, you know, Fights of the Year. I came back with Luis Ortiz. That was an epic one. And then came back with Fury, another epic fight. And then we're going to hit the two again.
That's the thing about you that makes it interesting, is that you're not just a guy who knocks guys out, but you're a guy who can take it. You're a guy who can take it, and you're a guy who figures out a way to win. Because there's a lot of guys that when it's going bad, they don't come back. When
Most
it's
definitely.
Going good, they win forever. But when it's going bad, it's hard for them to come back. But you figure your way through bad situations, and you make adjustments.
Even when something is going wrong with my body, like I done had 7 operations on my arm. You know, it's been many times. Like surgery, breaking, you know, just breaking my arm, tearing my bicep, breaking my hand. You know, many times in my fights, I've broken my hands and still fought. You know, torn my bicep, coming in third degree burns. You know, all that stuff. Like I'm a true warrior. You know, I always think I'm like, if I do something, like if I break my hand or when I tore my bicep in the ring, my whole mentality changed into, well, that motherfucker gotta fall off. That's why I gotta keep fighting. I gotta keep going. I'm a warrior. You know, and you can never tell, you know, because I still throw it with bad intention. You know, I'm still, you know, landing and hitting it. Just like with the Chris Areola fight, when I broke my hand and tore my bicep, my team knew I broke my hand, but I didn't mention I tore my bicep because I'm like, why tell them? I don't want no one to panic. I'm not worrying about it. I'm going to keep throwing it. I got to keep. And Chris was so surprised that I did all these things and was still able to throw it. It's just the mentality when it comes to comeback. Like, my mentality, just overall, it just, I feel I'm the best. And if you're going to come and beat me, you got to come and beat me. It's not going to be easy. That's why most of these guys, when they fight me, they bring their A game. Every last one of them, you know, because they know it's going to be tough. And they also know I have the power to get them out of there, you know. And a lot of guys, you know, they're afraid of that. Because, I mean, over and over again, like I said, my power lasts from the first through the 12th round. You can never be, like, too comfortable with me because of that, you know. And that's big for me to have, you know. I've always sat back and, like, saying, you know, I've said the same question to myself, like, damn, well, you got all this power, like, and – you know, me being the person with it, I felt many times where I felt dangerous. I felt like at times it could be too much power because I get scared of myself at times because I know I got the potential of potential to hurt someone seriously. You know, just dealing with it, just looking back and seeing some of the guys I've knocked out and seeing the reactions and, you know, I done broke guys' arms. I done broke their eye sockets. I done, you know, put them in seizures, you know, almost killed Spuka in New York. You know, he laid there for a while. You know, I didn't even see him breathing, you know, and so forth and so on. You know, it's been amazing to have so much power, but still trying to understand it as well, too, you know. In that fight with Fury, I couldn't, like, it was crazy. I couldn't strain my right arm out. It felt like something was stopping me from really, really just throwing it straight into the end for some reason. Like, it was
because you were trying to knock him out so bad?
I definitely was trying to knock. I was very anxious of knocking him out, but it was something that was holding. Like, I couldn't strain it out. I kept going back to my corner. Like, why you can't throw the right hand? It's right there. This dude would bend down like right here in slow motion. It seemed like to me. I've seen this look many times. I've knocked guys out many a time in sparring and in competition that put it right there because you have your temple exposed. And, you know, when you get hit in the temple, it knocks your equilibrium off. You know, you can't get – your body is not responding like the mind is. And he'll be right there, and it's like I still overloop my punches. I telegraph it. I'm like – it felt like someone stopping me or something. Like it was crazy. That's why I said that. Ooh, you know what I mean? I kid you not.
You think you put some gypsy magic
man,
on you?
Man, come on with it. I understand it. I understand it now. You know, I understand everything.
But I have to give some credit to him and his
most
style,
definitely.
Too, right?
Most
I mean,
definitely.
He's a phenomenal boxer.
Yes,
he is. His style and his movement. I mean, and to see him pull that off and be that fresh, even in the 12th, I mean, he had to have that kind of endurance to get up after you knocked him down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Yeah, you definitely. I definitely take nothing from him. He was a great fighter that night. You know, he definitely brought his best, and that's all you can bring is your best and put on the performance. That's why, you know, when we made this fight happen, because it didn't take long for us to make this fight happen. He reached out to me and said, you know, I feel embarrassed for what Joshua them doing to you, and you know, I want to fight. Let's make it happen. Let's show the world who's the best, who's the two best in the business. Like, bro, let's make it happen. You know, it was just like that off of a conversation.
I like the build up to the fight too, because both of you were very confident, and both of you were talking, you know, that you're gonna beat the other and knock each other out, but. At the end of the fight, when it was over, it was nothing but respect.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing but respect. And in this day and age, man, it's just there's something nice to see about two dudes who just went to war for 12 rounds, and it turned out to be a draw. Mm-hmm. And even after all that, nothing but respect.
Right, most definitely. And that's what it's all about, you know. Two guys can be at each other and, you know, say we want to hurt each other, even to the point you say you want to kill each other. You know what I mean? It's just the buildup. It's part of the sport, you know. It's up to us to be as professional as possible when it comes to that, because we're not going to really punch each other in the weigh-ins. Why would we mess up our money when we're trying to support our children?
Right.
You know, a lot of things that happened in the press conferences and stuff was because of others. Everybody else want to push and shove. The ones that don't really matter and not going to be in the ring, everybody want to push and shove, so it makes it look worse than what it really is when you got two guys that really that matters that's getting in the ring, you know. But even, you know, a lot of people like, oh, they smiling at each other. They're doing this. Like, that don't mean nothing. We still got to get in the ring at the end of the day and punch each other in the face. And that's the big thing about it. He wanted to put on a great performance and support his family as well as I, you know, especially because it's been in my country. I feel like I had the world attention. Now, I've been waiting for this moment for so long. It's like, I got him. Got to make a great stand. And, you know, that with all the pressure and so anxious. I was anxious to do something that I already does. And that's in fights in devastating fashion. I didn't have to force that. And I know that if I force, it never happens like I want it. You know what I mean? But it's just overwhelming to have the world attention.
Yeah.
You know.
How much different did it feel than a regular fight?
It felt it was amazing. It was amazing, man. I swear. It was just to come out there and just, you know, come out and just feel the energy of the people. They were so excited. And I was like, I already knew who all was, certain people was coming because we was, you know. But it doesn't matter who was there. It's just the point of just having the center of attention. I didn't have to fight against no other sport or nothing like that. Because, you know, it's hard here in America. It's hard to make it in the world. America. Every time I fought, I've had to fight against other sports and certain things, you know. And it's always been difficult. Especially every fight I've had to promote it by myself. Because these guys are scared to talk. Or then some of them, you know, with Ortiz, you know, he spoke Spanish. Although it was a epic fight, he spoke Spanish. And sometimes I had to do some of the Spanish TV, you know, because they wouldn't do it. Like, it was, you know, just to get it out, you know. But with Fury, I knew I had the right dancing partner.
Well, it seems for you that considering how recently you actually started boxing. I mean, what are you 11 years in now? How many
11
years in?
Yes.
11 years. Mm-hmm. That's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just still learning.
Yeah.
Which is insane. Yeah. Like, you're getting better. I mean, as you're the champion, you're getting better.
Right.
That is and a guy like Luis Ortiz is an epic dance partner for that.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with this guy who goes through the Cuban amateur program. He's a southpaw. He's a big motherfucker. Mm-hmm. You know, good boxer, man. Real.
Over 360-something amateur fights. You know, that's a lot. If I had that much experience, you know, you never know.
And he's another one you knocked out late in the fight.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think he had the most difficult style out of anyone I fought, though, thus far, though. Just being southpaw, you don't really get too much training. Guys with southpaw, not too many around that's heavyweight, and he's a very slick and fast counterpuncher. That's what he waits on. And you know, with fighting him, I really, really, really had to think about my next move or going in, what I had to do. You know, so Ortiz, I understand why a lot of these guys don't want to fight Ortiz.
Yeah.
They say he old. But they don't want to get in there. They don't want to go against that old man, though. You know,
he's not too old.
No, he's not.
He's old, but he's not too old. He'll still fuck you up.
Come on with it, man.
Yeah, he moved his last fight, man. He looked phenomenal.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he moves good. His jab is outstanding, and he's so well schooled. You know, it's like you see the little stutter feint that he does. He pops that jab on you, and look, he's always reading you, looking for your reactions. Man. He's a beast, man.
He is, and I always give him credit for that until I see someone just come in and dominate him.
Yeah,
you know, we even with me and him, we had a connection between our daughters, you know, because he's got an ill daughter as well, and as well as I. That's why when a lot of stuff started coming out with him, you know, saying that he did drugs and not passing the test, the VADA test and stuff, all that, I still wanted to fight him. I still wanted to bless him with that opportunity because of his daughter.
Yeah.
Because I can relate to him, just like I say this, the story with Fury selling with the mental illness and stuff, like how people was emotionally tied. Like, I got emotionally tied to Ortiz because he was a father that dealt with a child with a disability as well as I. So I know how hard it is to take care of children with disabilities, and I know it takes a lot of money. You know, so I'm always for him. Yeah, you know, I've been talking about him ever since that time we fought. Win, lose, or draw, I would have still been talking about him because of the emotional ties that I have with him. I understand him. And when you understand a person, you root for that person no matter what. No matter whose side you're on or whatever, when a person have something you feel like it's worse than the next person, or you can relate, you know, you want them to win.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, that's beautiful, man. And I think that having a guy like Ortiz as an opponent, that's one of those fights that I think for a guy like you who doesn't have a lot of amateur experience, when you fight a guy that's that seasoned and you get to see like what it looks like, you get to see what it looks like when you're in the ring with a guy who's had just, as you said, 300 plus amateur fights or overall, that's an amazing learning opportunity, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. And, you know, I just had the confidence that I was the best. I was, no matter what he had, I always going with that confidence though. You know, I blocked everything that his accomplishments, and we knew what we was up against, you know. But, you know, they was calling him the boogeyman of the division, and at that point in time, I still needed to prove myself because, you know, people still doubted me. They, you know, been doubting me from the start of my career. And I was like, since nobody don't want to fight him, I want to bless him with this opportunity. So these next moves that I've made with Stavern 2, then Ortiz, then Fury.
Well, the Stavern highlight knockout was one of the most ridiculous knockouts of all time. When you stand there with your hands down, and you step forward, and it's like it was a comic book scene.
Yeah.
It's like the way you knocked him out, like I said, about like you being a bad guy in a movie, it seemed like you were a bad guy in a boxing movie. Yeah. Like, it didn't make any sense. You were the guy, like if I was, say, if there's someone that was I was a coach of a good guy, and I was sitting ringside, and I was watching you do that, we'd be like, shit.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, man, when I stood over him, like that, I was outside of my body. I could see me and him standing there, and like I was a third person.
Wow.
I can't explain it, you know. And then when I started throwing the punches, like I went back into my body and started welling on them or whatever. I can't explain that.
Wow.
That feeling. Well, there's so many different things that happen.
That was a big one, too, because that got shared so much online.
Yes. Yeah, that was the start of it.
Millions and millions of people saw that online, and they were like, what in the fuck has this guy got in his hands? Yeah.
And that's when they started, who is this guy? Why we haven't heard about this guy
he's
before?
He's the champ?
Yeah, yeah.
That's when people, what? What the fuck? It's like everybody's waking up to the heavyweight division all of a sudden.
Yeah, it was so true.
And it was the perfect convert. There it is, like that. Dude, play it from the beginning, Jamie. Here it goes. Boom! I mean, come on.
You know, straight boxing skills. You know, I got boxing skills. You know, when I first fought him, I showed all that. I stayed disciplined. I didn't abandon the game plan. And you know, when I showed people that I could box.
Yeah, and he told.
But that was probably the only time I just really just stayed super disciplined. Not this fight, but the first one.
This part right here.
And this one right here.
I
went outside of my body. Right here, I was standing. Then I came back. I kid you not. I don't know what the hell was going on with me.
That was ridiculous. That was ridiculous.
He hit him in the back of the head. No, he didn't.
Yeah, he was quite upset. That's the strangest little concoction he's got on his dreadlocks there.
Yeah. Look like tape.
Yeah, that seems like that would get in the way.
To keep it up. You know, the Haitians believe in that too.
That was sweet too.
And then the referee, get out of me, ref. Like I'm really in. Get him. Now, it would have been funny if the ref would have let go and he rolled to the other corner. That would have.
Oh,
you talking about a movie?
Yeah.
That would have been. But, you know, that fight right there was the real start of it all, you know.
In terms of public perception.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I knew I was really going somewhere with that, especially when it went viral and then coming back with the Ortiz made it because it made it that much more interesting.
Yeah.
You know, to see what I'm going to do now. Because people tune in now, whether they love me or hate me, they tune in to see can I knock the next person out, you know, at this point in time. You know, because a lot of people didn't even know I was Olympian. You know, people, I don't really even get recognized for really being a WBC champion. You know, in other people's eyes, it's just that motherfucker that'll knock you out. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere
well, now,
I go.
Though, now,
it's
after
different.
The Tyson fight, they realize you're the champ. I mean, it used to be, I mean, obviously the belts are fragmented because there's a lot of sanctioning organizations, but it used to be there was Anthony Joshua and you.
Mm-hmm.
But people are not paying attention to Anthony Joshua right now.
No.
It's just, it's like he's literally been forgotten.
Most definitely. And that's a great way to put it. He's really been forgotten.
I mean, he's defended his title since the Klitschko fight how many times? Twice?
Maybe three. I'm not I remember the Parker. Was Parker after? Yeah, Parker was after.
Yes.
Parker. Was it the Tackham? Was Tackham before then? I'm not.
Well, what is interesting is if this continues you know, if you and Tyson have a rematch and then you eventually get to fight Anthony Joshua, if you guys fight in Europe, I mean, you might be able to fill up some giant fucking crazy ass soccer arena or something.
It's going
to
be crazy.
I mean, if you go over to England and fight him there, that would be insane. Because he's a giant superstar over there.
Most definitely. And I definitely, we'll definitely be able to go over there and get an opportunity to go over there. You know, even if it ain't with Joshua, even if it was somewhere, I want to expand out there as well, too. But we'll definitely get a fight with Joshua out there and probably bring 100,000 or plus. You know, the only thing about the UK, a lot of people think that's where the money is, but that's not true. You know, they got a cap on their money. You know, it ain't like here in America. America always will be the mega of boxing, anything pertaining to that. Because the money is here. You know, how they sell their pay-per-view and how we sell ours is like day and night. They $20. We go from, shit, the cheapest 50-some on up to $100, and people pay for it. People, you know, it's fascinating, and people think because you see more people equals more dollars. But, you know, and that's, you know, it's a cap. It's a cap, but you can only make so much over there, and that's it. If it wasn't that fact, then you'll see more people from America going to the UK to fight,
right?
You know,
well, the casinos in Vegas are—they're probably going to want to do this fight next. That's where they want it because they want all that extra gambling money and restaurant money and show money.
Right.
That's where I would say it's likely going to wind up.
It could be. You know, we got a lot of places. You know, I wouldn't mind going back to New York as well. Boxing
Square Garden. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, you got so many diverse people there. You know, a lot of people look at travels and stuff like that, you know, although it'd be busy and stuff. You know, people want it still to be easy access. See, Vegas makes it easy for people.
Right.
Because, you know, the airport is right there, and then 5 minutes away, you're on the strip, and that's where most of the people be at and stuff. But, you know, we'll see when the time comes. You know, I'm open for any place.
When are you guys talking about a rematch?
Maybe we're looking at April, May, June, somewhere up in there, you know, and we'll see what happens. I'm excited, though. You know, he said he's back in the gym. He hit me up. He sent me a video saying how he's back in the gym and stuff like that. And I just hit back him likewise because it's crazy because his mindset is being back in the gym, and mine is the same way. You know, I've been traveling a lot, talking about this fight. Like, it's been like I'm already, you know, in discussion with certain outlets, whatever. It's like we've been boosting up this rematch fight. Like it's almost here. It's been crazy though. It's what my career needed as well too. You know, so I don't mind. I've been from LA to New York. I'm just getting from New York. Now I'm back here. Then now I'm finna go to my original hometown. I got some things I gotta do out there. Enjoy the holidays. I'm gonna take a vacation with my family. And then once I get back, I'm back into the gym myself.
Well, boxing fans, hardcore boxing fans, already knew who you are. But this was the breakthrough fight for the general public. This is a breakthrough fight where people know about it now. And the next fight, the rematch, first of all, you couldn't ask for a better dance partner when it comes to promotion. Yeah. I mean, Tyson's fantastic on the microphone. He's hilarious. He's got that great accent. Yeah. It's fun to listen to him talk. So you guys promoting this and getting ready for whatever April, May, June, whenever it takes place. I mean, this is going to be probably one of the biggest heavyweight fights, if not the biggest of all time.
Oh man, I'm just so excited. You know what I mean? Because I can visualize it now. I couldn't really visualize how big this could become. I knew it was going to be big, but you just don't know how people are. You know, people are funny, especially, you know, people always have things to do, you know.
But you nailed it, that there was nothing else competing with you. There was nothing else there to watch. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect storm. And then it was in L.A., so all the stars came out. It was a big deal. Man.
It was amazing. Man, I'll never forget it, you know. It was, excuse me. Like I said, I've been waiting for that moment for so long, you know. They don't have this problem in the U.K. because no matter what, they love boxing. It's their second nature sport. They don't have college sports and professional sports that they had to deal with. Boxing is, like I said, their second nature sport. And they don't have as many as people we have here. They have like, what, maybe 66 million, something like that. Alabama and Mississippi, they can fit UK and Alabama and Mississippi combined together. But they can fit the whole state in Texas and still have space. Which over here, We got so much. We got how many colleges and professional sports, and, you know, boxing is like probably the last sport, you know, on the list. You know, I'm probably, you know, exaggerating with that a little bit, but it definitely seemed like that. We definitely, you know, in the back. And there's so much to compete with. It's so hard here to do it. And then when you finally get that shine, you know, that's where it comes from. You know, when you're in it and you understand it, it's like how it's so hard it was to get it, to get to this point. You know, down near 11 years, like, to get to this point. And then when you finally get here, it's like you're here.
You're there, in the big time.
Yeah.
When you think back, when you're driving that Budweiser truck.
I appreciate every job that I had, you know. I appreciate everything that, you know, that had happened to me in my life. It allowed me to appreciate, you know, who I am now. It allowed me to appreciate just the smaller things. It allowed me to just be myself, you know. I'm a type of person that I don't really care about fame. I don't even want to be called the celebrity, you know what I mean? I want to be able to live my life and do what I do. I want to be able to enjoy just the smallest things of life. I don't want people to take that away from me. You know what I mean? Being able to go to a movie or a grocery store, whatever, spend time with the family, can't shut, because I like cooking. I like going to the grocery stores, the fresh market, pick out my fruit and stuff that I want to put in my whatever I'm preparing for the night and stuff like that. And I'm a people's person as well, so I don't mind being bothered. But, you know, it can get crazy. I've seen other people get crazy for not only mad, you know, and they've said it themselves, like they wish that they could do certain things, normal things. But people take it to the next level, you know, get all in your bit, especially after this fight. Like I done had to cut some people, you know, I done had to cut some people because their intentions was already wrong. They seen the potential. They seen the opportunity and they tried to make moves on me. You know, already.
Yeah.
You know, and different things. That's why I said lonely at the top, you know, because you get to the point where you don't know who to trust. You start doubting everybody around you. You know, I'm an energy person, so I'm always refreshing the feeling of the energy. Let me see what it feels like. You know what I'm saying? That'll always allow me to meet certain people, to be around certain people, because if you change your presence, the energy that you just, it will change as well, too.
So it changes, it shifts the way you feel when you're around them. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you feel like they're looking for angles, they're trying to profit off of you, they're trying to get you to do things.
Yes, you know, and, you know, I'm a strong-minded person. I got a lot of strong-minded men around me. I always tell people we speak positive, we think positive, and we surround ourselves by positive, you know, positive energy, you know, and then our results is always positive. The only time you ever see me, you know, acting out, I would say, if someone come and break that peace, you'll never find me and my brothers, you know, out, you know, messing with someone, starting anything. I'm not the one that start anything because I want peace. I don't even want to see a fight outside if it's not in the boxing ring. I'll walk away if I see it on the outside because I feel like they don't know what they're doing. You know what I mean? Then something can happen easily. You see guns being pulled out nowadays and, you know, any little thing. So I try to stay away from confrontation as much as possible. That's why I thank God that I'm a homebody. You know, if I'm not here, I'm at home. You know, back and forth. Because they say when you have to find things to do, when you have to leave home all the time, you don't have a peaceful home. And I believe in that. You know, I don't understand when it's busy, you have to work and stuff. That's one thing. But, you know, when you just, man, let's go here, let's get out and do this. See, I don't put myself out there to be a risk for no one. You know, my risk is at home. If something gonna happen, then, you know, Deontay was at home. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't put myself out there to have chances after chances where people look down and say, hey, let's do this, let's do that to him. Or I try to, because I know what I'm capable of doing. You know what I mean? And I like being me. I just like being laid back, down to earth, get along with everyone. I'm a people's person. And a lot of people will never know it because they only see the perspective of me in the ring or they see me on YouTube and
I'm doing
interviews.
Intense.
Yes.
But you're a very mellow guy. Like right now, you're just chill.
I'm the coolest. I'm the best, you know. And
well, it's got to help, too, that you train a lot. So, you know.
Relieve the stress.
Yeah, man, you must be training constantly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get my times in. you know, if I'm not with my family. I love my family, you know. I got some beautiful children. I got a beautiful woman. And I love being around them. I love being able to see my children grow, being able to see them smile, you know, and tell me good morning or kiss me just on free will without me having to tell them or ask them. They just come up and kiss me and say how much they love me and stuff. It feels good. The only way you want to, if you want to see me cry, deal with kids. It don't even have to be my kids. It can be others as well. I love kids. It's nothing. And what hurts me so bad with kids is that to see some kids have to grow faster than what they normally would have to, you know, have to be an adult fast, because I think your childhood years are some of your best years of your life, because you don't have really no responsibilities. And when you get out into the real world, that's when reality hits. That's when it's like, oh, this is real, you know. So my heart goes out to a lot of kids. I love children, and that's what keeps me strong in this sport, you know.
Do you worry about getting more famous? Do you worry about the consequences?
I don't think about getting more famous, you know. I know it comes with the territory, you know. And even if people know everything, I just want people just, you know, don't hold me. Don't look at me as someone that holds me higher than you know. People have high expectations for you, and when you do something, they think the biggest thing in the world to happen. Or, you know, you can do the same thing as a Ben that work at McDonald's does, but because I have the name and he doesn't, then it makes it even more, you know, worse than what he done, you know.
Right.
I'm like, we all are humans. Yeah, we are humans. Yeah. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to do things. You probably do some things that you don't supposed to do or you get in trouble with doing, you know. It's just part of life, you know. And I never make myself seem like I'm better than anyone, you know. I'm a type of guy that I'll talk to a homeless man, and if the conversation lit, we'll go. I'm a people's person. My mother was a people person. The term is she never met strangers. I never meet strangers, because you can never know by me interacting with a person, do I know that person or not, because of how we are interacting with each other. And that's just me. I'm a people's person, because you just never know who you may meet.
Right.
And what they can give you, what advice or what you can give them, you know, to make their day better, you know, or hug or say, man, I love you, man. Or, you know, that's the finer things of life. That's what life is all about. It ain't all so much about who you are and how much money you got, because that can be gone tomorrow. You know, it ain't about that. You know, it's about treating people with respect. You treat me with respect, I treat you no matter what you are in life, because you're a human being. And that's what I'm all about.
And then as you get more famous, though, you're going to get more. The numbers are just, that's where it gets unmanageable. When people start waiting for it. Like, you ever see what it looks like when Manny Pacquiao was training?
No.
When he was in his prime, especially when he was training in the Philippines, it was insane. Like, Freddie Roach was there with him, and, you know, they would look outside, and people would be holding their phones up just waiting for him to look outside the window. Mm. Just hundreds of people everywhere he goes. And, you know, he lives in the Philippines, so it's he's this superstar in this incredibly poor country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really humble guy, too. But he handles it in an amazing way. I don't know how that guy does it, but he's very chill, too.
Yeah, well, he had to have, you know, he'd have been knocked down and had to be brought back up. You know, life teaches you lessons, and God bless you sometimes with second chances. Mm. You know, and when you do get the second chance, you know how to handle it a little bit better than the first time. You know, hopefully you don't never have to go through nothing dramatic, you know, or nothing severe, you know, to learn a lesson.
Yeah.
You know, because he probably would tell you himself, you know, there's a lot of things that he was doing that he had to correct, you know, had to get himself right or whatever, because it can take you away, you know. If a person dwells so much, not saying Manny did this, but just talking in general, if a person dwells so much on, you know, being famous and people loving him and knowing him and stuff like that, like, it can take their mind away from them. They'll become this type of person. That's when people say, oh, you've changed, you know. And then I've seen it firsthand. I've seen a person with no money, and then when they get some money, they don't know they're changing.
Right.
You know, it's just something that's happening. And people will say, you changing. They'll be like, no, I'm just, they'll think they just them, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But not in reality, you know, slowly but surely, they're changing and stuff like that. And I'm a type of person that I'm not judgmental of people's lives. I'm a type of person that whatever you do in your life, you chose to do that. I mean, who am I to judge you? Mm-hmm. I don't judge people because I don't want them to judge me. You know what I mean? Whatever, I'm a type of person that whatever you get involved with, it's a consequences that you it's consequences behind your action that you're gonna have to face. Whether you do the right thing or the wrong thing, you're gonna have to face the consequences behind it.
Yeah.
And only you're gonna have to face it, you know, at the end of the day. And that's why I respect people. Whatever you do, you know, it's your life. Have fun with your life. You know, we make mistakes to correct them. Long as we learn from our mistakes, then, hey, we're all human, you know.
Now, coming to this rematch, what would you do differently?
In this rematch, what I would do differently, I wouldn't abandon the body. I hurt him twice in the body. I should have kept going with the body. Mark kept telling me to keep going to the body, going to the head, go to the head, go to the body. And I abandoned that whole thing. I would probably jab more, and I'd definitely be more calmer this time around. You know, when you fighting a guy twice, the first time you get to experience him, the second time, y'all kind of know each other a little bit better than the first time. And I really felt Fury brought the best of Fury, but it definitely wasn't the best of Deontay Wilder. And at this point in time, we know what to train for, because I don't think he's going to change nothing up. He fought a great game, you know, a great fight. And I don't think it's, you know, nothing that could be changed up. Maybe he probably lose a little. If he get in the gym now, he'll be a little bit lighter for sure. And that could mean a little bit lighter on the feet, though. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But we're definitely going to adjust, make some small adjustments, and I can't wait. It's gonna be explosive.
Now, when you do a training camp for a big fight like this, how many weeks do you prepare for?
This fight was 3 months.
3 months. And so do you start up and start slowly ramping? And who sets your schedule in terms of, like, what you do every day?
With camp, my longtime trainer, Jay, he sets up, like, all the sparring partners and stuff. I got strength and conditioning coach and different and chefs and stuff like that. So I got all that under hand. I got all that, you know, organized.
So someone prepares all your food. Someone they prepare your diet.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, yeah. For sure. That's why I was surprised I came in such a low weight, even at 212. Yeah. Because, you know, in camp and stuff, you know, I got such a high metabolism. I just never know. I don't really just keep up with my weight. I'm not the type of guy that I weigh in all the time or whatever. I think because I've gotten by with this power for so long, it's like, you know, it's just an image, you know. Mm-hmm. I can't gain weight. Like, I don't understand. You know, I may have to do that blood testing thing and see, like, they got it where you can take your blood and they can do a test and see what types of food would make you gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm try that out.
But do you want to gain any weight?
Yeah, I want to gain a little bit. I always had a goal of being 245 with my 6'7" frame.
But do you think that being 245, you might get tired in the later rounds?
No, you see, you gain weight and keep the speed. So you know, as you gaining, you continue to work, keep your speed. That's how we always wanted to go at it, because we had a lot of guys that, you know, that specialize in bulking. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. And we didn't want that. I didn't want to bulk up.
Right.
You know what I mean? I wanted to gain weight and keep the speed, you know. But just as much as I gain weight, as much as I work out, and my metabolism's so high, so it's like I lose weight in my sleep.
How many times do they have you eating a day?
We was eating about three to four times a day.
And, you know, like, what kind of foods? They have any kind of special diet?
Yeah, we was eating steak, fish, and chicken. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of
low carb
sweet potatoes.
Okay,
you know, we were eating. You know, I definitely have us with since I'm in the South. You know, I had to have me some greens and cornbread. Mm-hmm. You know, we was doing a lot of let me see. Damn, I'm getting rid of my. I know we had mashed potatoes. We had a lot of Hoppin' Johns. Hoppin' Johns is like. Pinto beans and rice together with onions and stuff like that. You put up squash, do a lot of spinach. We had spinach. I was doing a lot of tuna.
So just whole foods, very
healthy. Yeah, most definitely. Very, very happy food. Mm-hmm. You know, I get all my stuff from the whole food.
Do they have you supplementing with vitamins or anything like that?
Correct. I was using the vitamins and stuff. I was using the vitamins. I did the vitamins. I did the whole nine with the vitamin thing. Like, I really had, they would bring me a kind of holder for the pills and stuff for each day of the week and stuff like that. And just, and still, like, I wouldn't gain, with the Ortiz, I didn't gain, like, still, like, I'm like, what the world going on with my body? Like, I don't know what type of freakish body that I have, you know, because I try to put on the weight. We're going to try another method this time. I'm going to actually try to eat I'm going to try to eat every 3 hours or so like that. I'm going to have my assistant with me and whatever. So he'll bring me protein shakes, you know, and being able to, all right, you know, just eating something.
Right.
I want to put, I want to see what this weight thing will look like, you know. We're going to, like I said, this next fight is going to be good.
But the problem is you're doing so well. Like, I don't know if I would do shit different. It seems like don't fix it if it's not broken in terms of that.
I know.
Because the thing about you is your endurance is so consistent. When you're in the 12th round, your endurance is very consistent. It's not like a lot of big guys. They drop off later in the fight, and you see them leaning on each other more, taking more time in between exchanges, you know, trying to pace themselves out, trying to restore that energy. You've got that energy in the 12th round. And part of that might be because you're walking around 212, 215, and you're fighting 209. It might, that might be a real big positive, because obviously – the power is not an issue.
Correct.
So why else would you want any weight?
You know, like I was telling my, you know, some of my team want to see it.
Yeah.
You know, they want to see certain adjustments or whatever. And they know, they know that I'm only going to do what I want to do.
Right.
You know, they know they can't make me or force me to do nothing. But I am a team player, though. You know what I'm saying? I am a type of person that, if everybody in agreement on something, no matter how I feel about it, I'm like, all right. Because we're a team. We always been this way. Like, we, with my team, I got a great team. You know, we never leave a discussion without agreeing. We just never do. You know, no matter what it is, we always come to agreement on something. And with this situation, I told them, I'm like, all right, I'm going to try.
So what do they want? How much do they want you to gain?
They haven't said how much.
But they want you to put some weight on.
Put some weight on.
And this is your strength and conditioning coach? Is this your boxing coach?
Management and
everybody.
Stuff like, everybody in the grants. So, you know, I could easily say, nah, I ain't doing this. My power, you know, which I've said before. I like, well, I really don't need to wait. It's just like what you were just describing. I was saying the same thing. I mean, I got power and I got true power. And but I just started thinking, I was like, I'm a team player as well, you know. I'm never feel like, although I'm the fighter that's going to be in the ring, they're not going to be fighting, but we're a team, though. And I'm a team sport.
So how much weightlifting?
I mean, I'm a team player, and, you know.
They have you doing weightlifting? What do they have you doing?
Yeah, we're going to do weightlifting.
Are you doing it? Were you doing it for this camp?
Most definitely.
What kind of stuff?
We lift for strength. So we do a lot of stuff lifting for
deadlifts,
strength.
Cleans, that kind of stuff?
All that, the ropes, you know, pull-ups, different things like that. But I'm going to go back to not only lifting for strength, but for balance as well, too. You know, we used to do a lot of things with the balance ball, lifting weights with the balance ball, and a lot of stuff with the meds ball. I used to have this trainer that I loved. You know, he was amazing.
What happened to him?
When I had my title fight, you know, I think he started listening to people, you know, think he should. He saw a potential. He saw an opportunity where he felt like he can make a lot of money off of me, you know, and it wasn't the case. It's like we wasn't shortcutting him. He was getting paid the right amount of money. But you know how people don't understand boxing. They think it's more into it or you can get more. He tried to get rich off me, really. You know, off of one client. I'm like, bro, it's many of yous.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's very few of me. You know what I'm saying? And it's like we won. I'm like, bro, I miss him though. I miss him and but when you look at me like a piece of meat and try to benefit more than what really try to do, then you know you done cross me. Like you can't be trusted at the point. But he had me right. He used to have me right. I love everything he used to do. We still talk about him to this day. We had to move on, though, you know, because we know what his intentions was. And just imagine now. You let him back in, you know, they may do right, then they may not. You know, you just never know. But
that is a problem once you have conflict. Once you're all, you start having conflict, then you continue to have conflict, then it escalates.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people always do think that they're worth more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, though, because I'm talking about it. He used to have me right. Everything. With it. Oh, man, I just...
But you know, this is a thing that I think that there's a lot of good trainers out there.
Yes, yeah, so,
and all you have to do is kind of explain what the guy was doing and how he was setting it up, and you'll find a guy. Especially when you consider all the, I mean, it's not just for boxing, but there's so many guys that do that for pro sports, mm-hmm. and now they're adapting to boxing, and MMA is seeing a lot of this as well. You're seeing all these guys who are organizing these programs that, you know, they might have been doing NFL or NBA, now instead they're doing it for boxing,
correct?
For MMA,
it's a lot of things that in strength training that we do is a lot of things that we didn't do because, you know, I'm getting away with a lot of things. There's a lot of things in training that we does that a lot of fighter just don't do.
Like,
you know
what
I'm saying? It's like the, you know, most time when I go in, I'm hitting. You know, when I have a camp, it's mostly just hitting the speed, hitting the mitts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hitting the mitts and going over different things. I barely go in, hit speed bad. I definitely don't do no jump ropes. You know, sometimes hit the heavy bags. You know what I'm saying? Because of the power that I have, it's certain thing we trying to get coordination down and timing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I know if I hit any man, they going to sleep. You know what I mean? We know this. And it's just a lot of things that I didn't do because I'm getting away with it. And I still get away with it, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But at this point in time in my career, now we have the world attention. You know, I want a better me. I want a new me. It's a new Deontay coming, you know, and I'm so serious about it. That's why when my team talk about certain things, I'm like, yo, I'm down for it. Let's make it happen. Let's see what happens. We can at least try. That's all. I can get them the benefit of the doubt, although I may feel a certain way because I'm the one in there fighting. But, like, again, like we're a team. So
mm-hmm.
I at least can get them the benefit of the doubt and put forth an effort into trying.
When you're going through a camp, how many days a week are you doing strength and conditioning? And are you running in the mornings? Like, how are you scheduling your workouts?
Strength training is 3 times a week. You know, we go light on sparring days because, you know, I got all these big guys in there and stuff, so I need some strength for sparring. But we're going 3 times, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
So on sparring days you go light, or you go light on sparring?
Sparring days we go light with the weights
like that. So that you have energy for sparring.
Correct.
Right. And then on days where you're not sparring, then you hit it hard.
Correct.
So so somebody organizes all this stuff for you. Now, when you do strength and conditioning, are you running as well?
Strength and conditioning, we don't run. We don't like jogging. I don't do no jogging. You know, we do everything fast. We want to activate the fast twitch muscles.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We do everything with rapid speed. If I'm doing anything that consists of me moving my feet, is sprinting mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I wear a 45-pound vest on me as well, too, and all my exercise and everything that I do to have that extra weight on me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Everything, so, chin-ups,
everything,
squats, everything.
Everything. I used to do that with the trainer I was talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to do everything with this.
Do you do plyometrics like that as well?
Not so much. I still do every now and again. Mm-hmm. Every now and again. But we're finna do a lot of things. We're finna enhance it all. Like I said, I'm here. I feel like I'm here. And I know just being regular me, just doing things that I would normally would do, got me to this point. But now I just feel like I'm on a whole nother level now.
Mm.
I just feel like now it's time to apply the things that need to be really done and not the things that you know you can do and get away with.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's just how I feel at this point in time. So come to rematch, they will see a new Deontay Wilder.
Well, that is one of the things that's exciting about you, like I said, is that if you've only been boxing for 11 years, I mean, you're just starting to really touch your potential.
Hmm.
You're still putting combinations together. You're still putting your footwork with those combinations and learning new moves. I mean, you're not talking about a guy like Luis Ortiz, who's gone through just his gigantic amateur career and professional career, and he knows what he knows already.
Right.
He's not learning, he's maintaining. You're learning.
Yeah, most definitely.
That's one of the things that's so exciting about you in this stage of your career, being in, emerging as a star.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, just to learn. I always said that when there's nothing else to learn, then I don't want to be in this sport.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be a know-it-all.
Do you have an exit strategy? Do you know when you want to get out?
My goal is to unify the division, whether it be one champion, one face, one name, be the undisputed, the undefeated, the unified heavyweight champion of the world. I want to defend that for a couple of years, maybe until I beat all the top guys in the division, even maybe in the second tier. And then once I complete that, I'm done. Like, I'm done.
So maybe five more years?
I say I have 10 or less, mm-hmm. but I'm more on a 10-year. I'm more on the less, right. lesser of the years than anything. I just want to accomplish my goals, man. And
You're 30 now or 31?
33. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Started at 21, you know. I don't take too much punishment, you know what I mean? That's it. I always tell, you know, I got a great team outside of boxing. You know, one day I will get that phone call and they will say, Mr. Wilder, you don't have to work no more in your life. You know, I build for generation wealth. This is not just for the moment in time or, you know, just right now what I can do. Mm-hmm. It's all for my children. And it'll always be for my children. A lot of people can come in with different stories about themselves doing this and that, but when they're dealing with your children, you know, you always want to see them outgrow you.
Right.
You know, so with that being said, they got a long life to live, and it's up to me to be able to provide for them so they can be able to do what they need to do. I want them to be able to do what they need to do, but definitely not just sit on their ass where they don't want to have to do nothing.
Right.
I ain't into that business. It's always been hard for me. You know what I mean? No opportunity's ever really been given. And if it has been an opportunity given, it's a small one. What I had to create an opportunity inside of an opportunity. It's always been like that for my life.
But don't you think that's also part of the reason why you have so much power behind you? Mm-hmm. Not just physical power, punching power, but determination.
Yes.
Because you've had to overcome adversity. You've had to push through. And that gives you that willpower.
Most definitely. You hit it. You hit the nail right on the head.
Now, are you a boxing fan outside of your own career? Do you enjoy boxing?
I do. I try to attend as many fights as I can. You know, I have I definitely have a lot of stuff that goes on. Try to get me out there even more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we definitely be working on the outside of boxing. But I definitely enjoy the sport. Just seeing other guys.
Do you, when you think about yourself as being this heavyweight who is, you know, at the top of the division now, and you look at all these younger, lighter weight fighters, you know, like guys like Terrence Crawford, mm-hmm. Lomachenko, all these really fantastic up and coming fighters.
Yeah.
Do you try to apply any of the stuff that they do?
No, not necessarily. You know, it's good to look at and stuff mm-hmm. like that, but I'm just me. You know, I like my style. I never look and see what those guy does and try to apply it to my style.
What about past heavyweights?
No past heavyweights either. You know, my idol is Muhammad Ali. You know, I love Muhammad Ali. Not only just what he did in the inside of the ring, you know, because he's lost many a times. He, you know, he could predict certain things, but then sometimes his prediction don't come true. It was basically what he did on the outside. He knew who he were. He knew what he represented. He knew what he stood for. And,
yeah.
You know, and that was strong for me because I'm the same way. You know, to this day, I know who I am. I know what I represent. I know what I stand for. You know, and that meant a lot to me just to see him, just especially in those time and days, to be so strong and just paved the way. You know, just like Jack Johnson paved the way for Muhammad Ali then. You know, and then Muhammad Ali paved the way for us and so forth and so on with all the other great fighters. But, you know, we have tried to add certain moves. You know, Evander Holyfield used to do this. He'll step back like a counter punch. Mm-hmm. He'll try to come in on you, and then when he get you to react, he'll step back and try to counter punch.
Mm-hmm.
We got certain codes that we'll – this is like baseball or whatever. We got certain things that we can say, you know – and then I'll know what they saying just so it won't be like just regular boxing. All
right.
Do the 1-2 or stand like this because they'll understand what you're saying. But if you lose it in terms, mm-hmm. like give it nicknames or whatever, we try to do that or whatever.
How beneficial would it be for you to work with different people?
I don't know. I love my team. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't say ever not have your team.
Right.
I mean, but I feel like a guy like you, you have so much talent. It would be fascinating to see you just, you know, take a day with Virgil Hill, take a day with this guy. Would you get together with different people? Just, it just seems like you have so much possibility. There's so much.
My only thing with it is that would their egos, you know, be able to handle mines? You know, a lot of these trainers have big egos. Not saying that the guys you name have them, just saying in general.
I know what you're saying.
You know, I never worked with none of them, but, you know, when the egos come together, when a trainer feel like you need him, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that, then that's when things go wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because some trainers are like, you need me. They feel like if you don't have them, then, you know, you're not going to be successful. You know, because I done had guys coming, you know. You know, and because I'm very dominant, you know. If I don't see it that way, you know what I'm saying, not saying that I would – not do it, but I would put my input into. I'm not the type of person that just, if I see it some way, you see it a certain way, if I see it some way, then, you know, I'm not going to express it. I'm not that type of person that's just going to be quiet and just go along. I'm going to express my opinion. I'm going to tell you, like, nah, this is how I see it as well, too. That's why my team is so great. Like, they can see it, and I can see it a whole nother way, but we put it in together. We kind of make it mix where it can work. Like, all right, I'm trying this, and I can see one thing as well, too, in the ring, you know, and then we just make it work together.
One of the things is that you don't have any conflict in your team. That's, you know how giant that is? Like, major. How big is a fucking distraction? When you see fighters that aren't getting along with their coaches or aren't getting along with their strength and conditioning trainer or whoever the fuck it is, man, as soon as you have issues with management, you hate your manager, I want to get out of my contract, like, that fucks up so many fighters' careers and puts them on the sideline for a long time. Bro, Andre Ward.
I know so many.
Put him on the sideline for a while.
My brother Malik Scott, you know, is my closest one of my. He was a great fighter, but because of management and stuff like that, he wasted so many years.
Yeah, it's very common. It's very common. So that's the beautiful thing about your arrangement. Mm-hmm. You seem to have everything in order.
Right, most definitely. You know, I got a great team, man. You know, Mark, Jay, you know, I got Cuz. You know, I got a great team of guys, and they understand. You know, Jay never been in a situation like this. You know, my longtime trainer, you know, I'm the first to come out of Alabama to do certain things that I've done. So we both have learned on the way, you know, especially being in the spotlight. Well, you got Mark Breland, you know, two-time welterweight champion, 84 Olympic gold medalist. Talk soft. It's amazing how I can hear him, though.
Well, it's amazing, too, that you got Mark, because Mark, when he was a welterweight, was a phenomenal knockout artist. And similar to you in that he was long and tall. And Mark's always been, like, a very, like, even-keeled, intelligent guy. You know, so it's really interesting to see him make that transition to a trainer. And with you, I think that's, like, a perfect fit.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. When you can understand him, you know, he talks so soft. But you know, I've been with him for a very long time, so it can be 1,000 people in the audience. I can move your head, do the chair.
I remember back in the day, man, when Mark was in the Olympics, man.
Yeah,
I remember watching him fight on ABC Wide World of Sports. I remember when he fought Marlon Starling. I remember those days.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a great guy. You know, one thing about it is just everybody got positive energy. You know,
and that's
big for me. It's just like you said, like when you get management and stuff, you hate them, or you know, don't want to work with them. You know, it bring avoidance, some type of avoidance in the group. Like when you don't want to do something, you love going to train, but because of this certain person, you don't want to be there. You know, it just knock your energy level down. Like I said, I've never dealt with it, but I've had friends that have dealt with it before. Right. I've had my brother, he dealt with it before, you know, and I've seen it, you know, firsthand. You don't have to go to court and
can't do
nothing. You on the shelf because of this. And like, I've seen it over and over and over again.
The court part's the craziest.
Oh, my goodness.
Lawsuits.
Yes.
Trying to figure out how you get out of your promotional contract.
Man. you know,
sidelines a lot of guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of distraction. It'll make you not want to train because you will feel like your career is not going nowhere.
Well, it also stagnates guys because that becomes their primary focus. Instead of just getting better and preparing for the next challenge, you're always thinking about this legal issue you're going through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So, no, you're fortunate in that regard. You know.
Almost definitely. No matter what people, you know, look up on them as, because a lot of people are like, well, you need another trainer, is it? But the thing about it, you got to look at it. We didn't made it thus far.
Yeah. No, it's.
What other guy in the sport is knocking every guy out? You know, yeah, at least definitely making them hit the canvas like me. You know, 40-0 with 39 KO. That's just not. I know. I got power, but it still takes more than that. You know what I mean? Just you still got to be able to throw the jab and set it up to throw the right hand and throw the hook behind that and stuff like that. I got great trainers, especially in Mark. You know, he's a great trainer. He teaches me ways to throw the jab in different ways, you know. Although when I get in there and I look at it and I take my own judgment, but I also listen to him as well too. And at this point in time, you know, it's gonna be a lot of more, you know, listening. Like I see certain things because one thing I never want to do is if I hear you, I hear what you're saying, but it's not right there at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. And then I start taking what you see, and then I wouldn't get hit in the head or get knocked out. Now,
right.
I just never want to say, well, I'll listen to you and you got me put on the ground instead of listening to myself and getting put on the ground. You know what I mean? But, you know, I love my guys. I love my guys, and I can't wait for this. I can't wait for to get back in the gym. It's going to be a new me.
I can't wait to watch the rematch, man. Listen, it was a phenomenal fight. And I really appreciate you coming in here. I'm a big fan. I was a big fan before that fight, and I think the world's a big fan now. Yeah. So best of luck to you, sir.
Blessings. Blessings. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you so much.
Peace.
Deontay Wilder, ladies and gentlemen, the Bronze Bomber.
Amazing, baby.